flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Okay, business leaders, are you playing defense or are you on the offense? Are you just, excuse me, hey, I'm trying to talk business here. As I was saying, are you here just to play or are you playing to win? If you're in it to win, meet your next MVP, NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is your full business management system in one suite. With NetSuite, you're running your accounting, your financials, HR, e-commerce, and more, all from your online dashboard. One source of truth means every department's working from the same numbers with no data delays. And with AI embedded throughout, you're automating manual tasks, plus getting fast insights for your next move. Whether you're competing on your home turf or looking to conquer international markets, NetSuite helps you get the W. Over 40,000 businesses have already made the move to NetSuite, the number one cloud ERP.
Right now, get the CFO's Guide to AI and Machine Learning at netsuite.com/special. Get this free guide at netsuite.com/special.
Okay, guys.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03 on Tuesday afternoon, January 28th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. It's Travel Tuesday on the Noon Business Hour. And of course, a trip to Europe can be an exciting adventure, but it also contains surprises for American tourists. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, data shows mentorship drives success, with both sides of the equation benefiting from the process. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Michelle Reisdorf, jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Michelle, thank you for joining us today. And let's just talk about mentoring in the workplace. This is a long-time practice. Sometimes it happens when someone's in high school. Sometimes it happens when they're in college. Sometimes it happens when they're just starting out and moving into the professional world. But mentorship, that little bit of time that you spend with someone, just showing them the ropes and giving them some good advice as they step out into the world, could just pay tremendous dividends down the road.
Absolutely, Rob. Mentorship programs have been around for many years, as you commented. And, you know, I think the key thing is right now today, when retention is so important for companies, that we look at mentorship as a way not only to properly onboard new employees, but to keep them for the long term, because it is a way to develop their skills, gain their knowledge, incorporate, you know, their feelings into the workplace, and make sure that they become long-term employees to come.
And what are some ways that you can get into mentorship programs? I mean, for example, speaking for myself, I am part of the Marquette University mentorship program. So there are students who want to pursue careers in media or journalism or radio. And you know, every year it's a different student, and some have gone on to great success. And I'm very proud of that. And it's through in my case, it's through a school. But what are some other types of mentorship programs, and how can you get involved as a mentor or a mentee?
Yeah, so the university one is an excellent option, and love the involvement and, you know, good feeling you've had out of that. Some others that I have been involved in are chamber type mentor programs. I'm part of an executive club in the city that offers a mentor program where I was a mentee and learned tons, but am now willing to get back as a mentor. I've seen different professional organizations, women's organizations, industry organizations that also offer mentorship programs. And then simply just as you scan LinkedIn and you're making contacts, to not be afraid to ask someone if they will, you know, consider mentoring you, even if it's only for a couple of sessions. You can't be afraid to ask because there are so many avenues. Just a month ago, I met up with some good friends for dinner, and we got to talking about what I do, and she asked me, her nephew is graduating from college with a finance degree, and she said, would you be willing to just have a couple of calls with him and help mentor him as he gets ready to graduate and go on his job search? And, you know, I spent a wonderful 2 hours with this young man who will definitely go places. That was well worth my time to connect with him, to help him as he kind of takes his next stage. So there are so many different opportunities available. You just kind of have to listen and ask and learn to get involved.
Michelle Reisdorf, jobs expert with the Robert Half Company in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today to talk about the value of mentorship in this National Mentoring Month. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, some things you need to know when vacationing in Europe.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. A trip to Europe can be exciting, but cultural differences often catch American tourists off guard. Let's get some insight from Mark Walters, Walters World Travel and Culture. You can find him on YouTube. He's also an associate professor of business administration at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And I feel like this segment, we're going to flip the script, because usually we talk about how you can avoid ugly American behaviors when you are traveling abroad, for example, traveling to Europe. But today, Mark, we have the Festivus poll out. And now there will be an airing of grievances that American tourists have about their trips to Europe. And, of course, you've been there plenty of times. You talk to other tourists. And what's the number one American pet peeve about traveling to Europe?
I think one of the biggest one is the fact that sometimes you have to pay to pee. Like, you need to have a euro, which is like a dollar or $2, to use the public restroom. And otherwise, you're kind of out of luck.
Now, it's kind of a paradox, though, because you hear people that come back from Europe and they say, like, oh, my gosh, the bathrooms are so clean there. Well, it's because you're paying to use them. I mean, that used to be the highlight of the pay toilet system in the United States not too long ago.
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing, is you'll go in and it'll be clean. Like, you won't have to worry about anything. You can have it. There'll be toilet paper, all this stuff there. But you do pay for that experience. And for some people, you know, when you go and you're like, I got to go, and you don't have those coins on you, that's what I always say. Keep a few coins in your pocket just in case you got to go.
And then the one thing about Europe that everybody talks about is it's a lack of air conditioning. It's a latitude that's north of where we are typically. And so they don't usually use air conditioning, but when it gets hot, it gets hot.
Yeah, and if you want to kind of be prepared for that, like, some people actually will get little battery-powered fans for them, but I think it's really important. If it's a health concern for you, I would reach out to the hotel you're going to stay at and ask them if they do have air conditioning, how it is. Because even if they do have air conditioning, it doesn't mean you're going to get it nice and chilly. It might just be it keeps it in the high 70s.
I always wondered about European tourists who go to Disney World, where the air conditioning in all of the buildings is at full blast, and how they feel about that. What's if they have some sort of climate shock when they walk into the pin trading station and it's at 65?
Oh, they do. I mean, anytime I take my students from Europe to the, like, movies or anything, they ask, like, how do you people survive? It is like winter inside in the movie theater. And so it is one of those things for them. They will complain about how cold it does get when they go to the gym or they go to the mall. They're like, it's 90 degrees outside, yet it's 65 inside. How are you? And they're always worried that everyone's going to get sick because of this. So it is that is definitely one thing that will come with the Europeans going, what is wrong with those Americans?
And on the subject of keeping things cool, ice, they're not big believers in ice. And is there a cultural reason for that?
Well, I think one of the biggest reasons why you'll see, the Europeans will actually get upset when they come to the U.S. with all the ice is because in Europe, you don't get a free refill. So here in the U.S., you get free refills, put all the ice in you want. But in Europe, if you only get one glass, well, I want a glass full of soda, not a glass full of ice. So there might only be one ice cube in there. So that could be one of the kind of impacts you might see.
And then when it comes to just the hours in which things are open, the stores are closed on Sundays. So if you to make a food run for your hotel room or maybe shop for souvenirs, Sunday really is a day of rest in Europe.
It really is. You're probably your best bet on a Sunday is if you go to actually a train station. Those will have some shops open. And in some places like Portugal, the malls might be open, but a lot of places it does close. And it's not just Sundays. Like if you go to Wales or Scotland, all the shops might be closed at 6 o'clock at night. So I always say, get that souvenir shopping during the work days, during the work hours, because otherwise you might be out of luck.
And then everything is just smaller, and I think part of that is just a function of how old some of these buildings are. Some buildings, some homes, some tourist attractions were built hundreds of years ago when people were shorter and thinner, and 21st century man and woman are trying to navigate buildings that were built in the 1600s.
Yeah, and one of the things you're going to see is when you go to stay at, like, maybe you're going to an Airbnb or you're going to go to an older hotel, they might not have an elevator for you. So if you do have limited mobility, I would ask what kind of elevator they have, because sometimes they're so small, the elevator might just be for your luggage, and then you walk up the 3 flights of stairs to your room. So that's one of those things you might want to ask about.
Mark Wolters, Wolters World Travel and Culture. You can find him on YouTube. He's also an associate professor of business administration at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business in Urbana-Champaign. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, GM beats the street with its fourth quarter earnings.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
General Motors is optimistic about the year ahead despite slowing industry sales, increased geopolitical tensions, and regulatory uncertainty under a new administration. Joining us to discuss GM and the auto sector at large is Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit. Jeff, thank you for joining us today. And let's start off with the good stuff, and that is General Motors finished 2024 on a high note.
Yeah, a very high note. They posted a $14.9 billion pre-tax profit. Now, the actual net income doesn't look so good because they had to throw in $5 billion to turn around their Chinese operations. But the bottom line is they've got a lot of big SUVs, a lot of big pickups, and they're not selling them at big discounts. So that means big profits.
And it seems like we have two main areas of uncertainty, not only for GM, but for the American auto sector as a whole, going into 2025 with the new Trump administration. The first one, of course, being tariffs and what that would do to not only their assembly operations, but for their parts operations as well.
And GM does make a number of vehicles in Mexico and in Canada. They're already starting to import more of those to kind of stockpile them in case there are tariffs, and the tariffs are a temporary thing because they want to get them on the books now as coming across the border, also doing that with some parts. They say there are other things that they can do to respond to tariffs. They wouldn't talk about those, but they say those are a little more expensive, and they would only do them if the tariffs were actually implemented, and it looks like they're going to stay for a while. So the car companies are preparing for that. But I think they don't think it's going to be long term.
And then there are a number of question marks surrounding the EV transition. GM and the other Detroit-based automakers really investing in plants that would build EVs. It seems like EV demand has stalled out. It kind of plateaued in the last couple of years. And on top of that, now you have a executive order rolling back the Biden administration's EV mandates. With that much uncertainty surrounding EV construction and investment and manufacturing, how is GM reacting to it?
Well, the key has to be flexibility. I mean, you look on one hand, a lot of the profits are coming from the pickups and SUVs that are gasoline powered. They're putting out a lot of EVs, and they do still see some growth in EVs, just not at the level we had seen it. And GM, among the major car makers, has found a way to have a limited profitability on EVs. They say they no longer cost more to make than they can sell them for. So from the manufacturing standpoint, they're at about break even, but there's still, you know, billions of dollars into EV research and development and things of that nature. So they are finding a way to absorb some of the high costs there. And it'll be interesting to see what happens when they open a second EV-only plant, or if they open a second EV-only plant, because that's already been delayed a year.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Travel Tuesday, a hack that can help save money when visiting zoos, aquariums, and other facilities.
There's one thing that will forever change the way you sleep, and it's the softest 100% organic cotton bedding from Boll & Branch. You'll fall asleep faster, wrapped in the most luxurious comfort. You'll never sleep hot again with airy blankets, cloud-like duvets, and breathable sheets. You'll experience pure comfort on night one and feel your bedding get softer with every wash. Discover the difference with 15% off your first order at BollAndBranch.com with code ODYSSEY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Mayor Johnson talks about Chicago's position as a sanctuary city for migrants. The Trump White House freezes the funding of federal loans and grants. In Travel Tuesday, we'll discuss how reciprocal memberships can save money on museums and other facilities. Also on the travel beat, tracking a key advance in the quest for supersonic commercial flight. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow is up 171 points. The NASDAQ is up 343. And the S&P 500 is up 52. We have 38 degrees right now in Chicago, under partly sunny skies at 1231. Topping our news at the half hour, Mayor Brandon Johnson says his administration is partnering with the city's police department to make sure all immigrants are protected.
We will continue to work closely with the Chicago Police Department to continue to monitor this situation. We stand together firmly in our welcoming city status, as well as our commitment to protecting all residents of the city of Chicago, no matter where you come from or how long you've lived here.
Mayor Johnson and his counterparts in Boston, New York, and Denver have been asked to travel to Washington in 2 weeks to testify about sanctuary city policies. The city's Corporation Council has said the legal department is reviewing that request right now, so they can't answer whether or not Mayor Johnson will travel to Washington testify. Also, Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling saying that at least 100 people were arrested in immigration enforcement operations over the weekend. The Trump administration is placing a freeze on grants, loans, and other aid. The details from CBS's Nancy Cordes.
The Office of Management and Budget at the White House orders all federal agencies to assess all of their programs and activities to ensure that they comply with President Trump's recent executive orders. And in the meantime, it says all federal assistance must be temporarily frozen. The memo specifically mentions financial assistance for foreign aid, quote, woke gender ideology, and the Green New Deal.
The order is scheduled to go into effect at 4 o'clock this afternoon. It does not include Social Security and Medicare. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. Markets are higher. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist at B. Riley Financial based in New York. Art, thank you for joining us today. And after yesterday's tech sell-off that really pummeled the NASDAQ, was this type of bounce back day, was this basically inevitable?
Yeah, it certainly felt like yesterday was a shoot first and ask questions later kind of sell-off, you know, in large part affecting AI-focused names, for the most part, the semiconductors for sure, and then some of the artificial intelligence adjacent energy companies. that have been up significantly over the course of the last 12 to 24 months. So in the broader market yesterday actually did fine. When you look at, you know, the financials closed at an all-time high, 22 to the 30 Dow stocks were up. The transports made a new high. And you had Apple posting its best day in 4 months, and Amazon at an all-time high. So we actually saw 349 of the S&P 500 close higher yesterday. So this is a very confined to what could, the DeepSeek damage be to artificial intelligence darlings that have had a significant run. And it's not surprising with the amount of damage that was done to those names that we're seeing investors slowly tiptoe back in and see if the punishment really fits the crime here.
Now, DeepSeek, even though it was first unveiled in December in China, it did seem like a bolt out of the blue on Monday morning in terms of shaking a lot of our assumptions in the artificial intelligence sector. But what does it say about the market that there was such a rapid sell-off? This really was like a sell-the-rumor kind of situation. Is it a sign that investors are just looking for any excuse to chop some of the froth off of this market?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think it falls into that category. And it's also, you know, made a lot of investors really start to question just how much CapEx is going to go into the development of artificial intelligence, large language models, with the ultimate goal of getting to AGI. So to the extent that that shock to the system was, you know, did these guys really develop this large language model that bounced up to the top of the App Store over the weekend and only spend about $6 million doing that? And, you know, I think all of those are going to be open questions until they're not. I think the good news is if, in fact, DeepSeek had some success, you know, agnostic to how much it cost and how much help they had from the Chinese Communist Party, does this mean it's going to be cheaper for folks to develop AI business models, large language models, and move us closer to AGI? And that's a net positive for most of the artificial intelligence names. It's certainly a net positive for the consumption of artificial intelligence. So to the extent it's a story we're still going to watch play out, but to your point, it doesn't take much when you're at the altitudes we are to see much to see a little turbulence in some of these artificial intelligence names that have been, you know, going from lower left to upper right for the better part of 2 years here.
The Fed policy meeting starts today, wraps up tomorrow. We're not expecting an interest rate cut or an interest rate hike for that matter, but what can we expect out of Jay Powell tomorrow?
Well, the good news is there was a period of time at the beginning of the year that perhaps we thought there was a hike in store if inflation remained sticky and, you know, tariffs were put in place. I think a lot of that is still to be determined. But I think with the numbers we got out of both the CPI and the PPI a week ago, we know that the inflation is well anchored here. It's just not close enough for the Fed to feel comfortable cutting rates again, especially now that we're in an environment with full employment. So to the extent that that has bought the Fed some time to wait and see what new policies this administration rolls out, how much of their campaign promises actually come to fruition, and what that actually means to economic growth and inflation. So I think this is a positive refreshes for the Fed. They may not lean into the fact that they're waiting on policy, but they certainly don't want to prejudge policy with any monetary policy changes.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Travel Tuesday, how reciprocal memberships can save money on aquariums, zoos, and other facilities.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Travel Tuesday. Reciprocal memberships to museums, zoos, and other facilities often offer free or discounted admission to similar attractions across the country and even around the world, making them a budget-friendly travel hack for families. Let's discuss taking advantage of those opportunities with Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com, based in Chicago. Cindy, thank you for joining us today. And this is something that speaks to me because way back when the kids were really young and I had a schedule that put my weekend square in the middle of the week, we had numerous museum memberships, Cindy. And not only was it a great way to kill time on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, for me, it was a great way to save money on road trips as well, because you got reciprocity at facilities across the country.
Absolutely. You know, I think the museum reciprocity program is one of the best kept secrets in travel. And honestly, like you, we had memberships when the kids were little, and I never knew about this until one of my writers pitched me a story about it. And I was like, this is brilliant. Everyone should know about it. And it's so there are some things you want to know before you embark. So if you're thinking about buying a membership, you can buy it at a children's zoo. There's programs for children's zoos. There's programs for aquariums, for zoos, programs for specialty museums, history museums, you name it. If you have a favorite museum, especially if you're already a member or if you're thinking about becoming a member, you should look on the museum website for membership benefits and see if they're a part of a reciprocal program, and then look and see where else you can go. It's an astounding array, hundreds of museums and zoos and aquariums, like you said, around the world will take the membership from your Chicago museum and let you in for free or at a reduced price. Sometimes they'll even give you a discount in the gift shop.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you have to do your own homework, and obviously don't go by me, but I do have a recollection of back in 2017 when we were members at the Museum of Science and Industry about getting a discounted admission into the Science Museum in St. Louis during a road trip. So that's the kind of stuff we're talking about here. And even that could also give you some museum or aquarium or zoo reciprocity, like even around the Chicago area as well, because if you're the member, for example, of the Children's Museum in Glenview, at the time, 6 or 7 years ago, that got you a discounted or free admission into other children's museums in the area in their network.
Right. So you have to. So there are a couple things about that. One is you need to check when you're going to see who's in the list, because museums do drop in and drop out. So that may not be true. And also, in many, many cases, you have to, it's only good for museums that are 90 miles away. So for example, if you're a member of the Museum of Science and Industry here in Chicago, it doesn't mean that you can necessarily go like to the planetarium in Chicago, but you can go to a really fabulous science museum in Rockford for free. So read the fine print always, but mostly it's about knowing that this is an option for you. And, you know, if you know you're going somewhere where you're going to want to do a lot of museums, it might make sense to buy the membership. I mean, honestly, if you really wanted to save a buck or two, you could look at the list of all the museums where that has reciprocity, and you could buy a membership at the most affordable one for families if you're really into that. Or, you know, just buy one in your home museum, because I think museum memberships are an amazing value for families, because for most of the time they're set. So if you go twice, you've already made your money. And it has, you know, perks like better parking spots or maybe free parking, discounts in the gift shop, because, you know, the kids are always going to want something out of the gift shop and everything exits through the gift shop. So have your discount available to you. It's just a remarkable deal, especially if you've got a couple kids and you have to pay for four or more people to get into a museum or a zoo.
Yeah, I was going to say that in my situation, it's the Brookfield Zoo and the Carousel. We always have to ride the carousel before we go, and the zoo membership does save you a couple of bucks. Cindy Richards, editor-in-chief of SheBuysTravel.com in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Personal Finance Wednesday. And still to come, we're one step closer to supersonic commercial travel for the first time in a generation.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Travel Tuesday rolls on. Boom Supersonics XB1 plane officially broke the sound barrier this morning, bringing supersonic commercial travel closer to reality again, fulfilling a concept first discussed in the Noon Business Hour nearly a decade ago. We're joined by Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media and former tech editor for the Today Show based in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And the last time anyone could fly supersonic commercially was the last flight of the Concorde, and that was in 2003. It is now 22 years later. An entire generation has passed, Paul, and the XB-1, the next generation of supersonic commercial transport, successfully tested today. So what's the next step after this?
Wait another 20 years.
Great. Okay.
No, we can sign off now. No, the XB-1, first of all, it's supersonic travel is extremely attractive for a lot of folks, especially business people who want to, for example, go over to Europe and and avoid the you know, attendant jet lag, which is a huge challenge when you're running a meeting or part of a meeting and you have to be productive. So that's not, and that's great. And also, of course, the benefit of this collaboration with United Airlines, Boom United, is basically they're trying to, you know, get a brand new type of travel, and that's a luxury brand that otherwise has been unserved, because first class travel is beautiful and lovely for anybody who can afford it, but it's not really that different. It's just the front of the plane. This is imagined to be get them to London from New York in under 3 hours and get them there in a style that they're used to, and by the way, generate lots of profits.
Now, there were very ambitious designs for the Concorde when it was first unveiled in the 70s. Braniff had a Concorde back when Braniff was around, the original one, by the way, that sure. went from Dallas to New York and then flew supersonic over the ocean. There was a Singapore Airlines Concorde that went out to Singapore from London. But by and large, it went New York, London, New York, Paris, depending on whether you're on British Airways or Air France. But United now. Now, you could not only go to Europe on a Boom SST, but it could serve its Asian routes as well.
That's exactly right. And by the way, British Airways was in there, Air France, a whole bunch of people. But the reason they generally spent time going between New York and London or New York and Paris was because those things used up so much fuel. I mean, they were fuel hungry. And in this day and age, that's not a good marketing, let alone good, you know, good for the environment. So the promise of the XB1 is that it's much more efficient. And by the way, not only is it much more efficient, it even has competition before it's really gone there. One of the biggest challenges is it makes a giant boom when it, which hence the name, by the way, which isn't really a selling point, but it's when you break the sound barrier, you create a giant wave of air in front of you and makes a giant boom and upsets the animals and the people under you. So that's one thing. But NASA's design, which is a competing design, is going to use much more sophisticated aerodynamics and create much less noise on the ground. So, yes, the world's opening up, including Singapore, you know, lots of places in Asia from U.S., but it's also going to be much more fuel efficient and theoretically even faster.
Well, they did this test over the dry lake bed in Arizona or California this morning. So I really hope the pilots of the XB1 had their Beemans if this was a 100% tribute to Chuck Yeager and his flight in the X1 nearly 80 years ago. So once again, supersonic travel is within our reach. Paul Hochman, president of Humongous Media, former tech editor for the Today Show in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thank you for joining us today.
Every week on the Moth Podcast, we share stories that are funny, strange, heartbreaking, and above all, true.
I myself have been married for 56 years. Unfortunately, to four different women.
It turns out the people I was looking for all my life is what you people would call nerds.
Follow and listen to The Moth on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.